Welcome to Money Sense, where we go beyond the numbers to help Canadians design a wealthier life. With host Brent Laux and trusted experts Kevin Hagedis and Andrew Roddick, partners at PWM Private Wealth Council and portfolio managers with Q Wealth. Whether you're preparing for retirement, designing tax-efficient income, or planning for future generations, financial decisions can be overwhelming. With a spotlight on pension-style investing strategies that prioritize long-term stability, Kevin, Andrew, and the PWM team will share their insights and perspectives to help you protect what you've worked a lifetime to build. Because effective financial planning should feel like laying a strong foundation. This is Money Sense.
Oh, we've got a very interesting Money Sense program for you this week. We're on the topic of the myths and misunderstandings of estate planning, power of attorney, beneficiaries, who gets your money, who pays your bills after you're gone. We'll get into Money Sense after this break on News Talk Radio. Welcome to Money Sense this week. I'm Brent Laux, your host. Very interesting program planned for you, the myths and misunderstanding of estate planning. I'm joined by Kevin Hagedis, portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners and, of course, the founder of PWM Private Wealth Council. And a very special guest joining us this weekend, Allison Qatari. Allison is the founding lawyer at Bridge City Law Office, a law firm focusing in real estate, estate planning, and business law. Kevin and Allison, welcome to Money Sense this week.
Thank you.
And Kevin, before we get a formal introduction here of Allison, tell us how Allison and Bridge City Law fits in with what you do at PWM and the services you're providing your clients.
Sure, Brent. I just want to start by saying I'm so very pleased that Allison is with us today. And, you know, when creating a financial plan for someone, legal is often a big part of it, obviously. From someone needing a will or a power of attorney put in place or restructuring their business with new shareholders, or maybe they're doing an estate freeze. And it really is wonderful that Allison is a strategic member of our team, and also that her office is literally 100 feet away from mine just down the hall. So it's super, super convenient for us as well.
Good to have a lawyer close at hand.
Exactly.
Definitely an exciting partnership for PWM. And Allison, again, welcome to our Money Sense program. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your experience.
Thanks, Brent. So I've been a lawyer for over 17 years now. And before I got my law degree, I did end up getting my business degree with a major in accounting, which I find helps me in all my areas of practice. So I mainly, like you mentioned, practice in real estate, wills and estates, and corporate commercial work. And I'm also currently a member of the Society of Trusted Estate Practitioners. So it's an international organization, and it earns me that little TEP behind my name. So I've worked at both big and small firms here in Saskatoon. And in March of this year, I opened up my own small law office called Bridge City Law Office here in Stonebridge.
Okay, in terms of those three areas that you mentioned, real estate, wills and estates, and corporate commercial work, do most of your clients then fall within those areas, Allison?
So I find that they kind of enter in through one of those three streams. And I've always tried to have my practice be very complementary to each other. I've always wanted to be considered one of those one-stop shops for all your general legal needs. At some point in your life, most people are going to buy a house, need a will, or open up a business.
And you're here today to tell us some of the myths and misunderstandings and maybe some of the common misconceptions that people may have about wills and estates. One of those is that many people assume their executor and their power of attorney are interchangeable. Can you clarify the primary distinction between those two roles and when each document actually becomes effective?
For sure, Brian. This is a pretty common misconception that people have. However, these two documents are not at all connected, and they serve very different and distinct roles. So your will, which is the document that most people are familiar with, is where you appoint an executor, and that does not take effect until you pass away. So for most people, this document is something that they make and forget kind of thing, right? It has no authority until you pass away. You make it, you sit it on a shelf. That's where it sits. However, your power of attorney is something that's typically effective immediately upon you signing it. It's in effect until your death. And so the scenario is more so that one document starts, and then the next one takes over when it ends. So they cannot both be in effect at the same time. And it's also, the power of attorney is a pretty flexible document. You can use it in a lot of different ways.
Can you explain that? How so?
So one of the biggest examples of this is that you can have multiple powers of attorneys at the same time. So in contrast, you have one will and one will only, and that's all you can have. When you have a power of attorney, you can use it to govern your business assets, separate and apart from your personal assets. So if you're out of the country and you want your business partner to take over managing the business affairs for that limited time, you can do that. You can have it be just a time limited thing. You can have it be asset limited. So we use those as estate planning tools, and they can be really useful when you're considering who do you want to have manage your business accounts and who do you want having manage your personal affairs and your personal accounts if you were in a car accident tomorrow. So it might not be the same person. And then all of your power of attorneys will end upon your death. And then your will and your executor takes over.
Yeah, you know, another common misconception that many people have is that they believe that if their assets are held jointly or if they have a spouse, they don't need a power of attorney or a will. So Allison, can maybe just elaborate on that a little bit and I guess why a power of attorney is really crucial even for married couples?
So a common statement that I hear from clients is that they think that because they're your next of kin, your spouse can just sign things for you. But if you consider why that might not be a good idea, that your spouse could just take out mortgages on your behalf or take out credit cards on your behalf or sign things over without you having any knowledge of that, you can understand why that's not the case and that's not what the law is. Your spouse has no legal authority to sign on your behalf unless you grant them that authority through a power of attorney. This is regards to your all your property and your assets kind of thing. So there is no just legal right to just take over someone else's assets or financial affairs without that power of attorney, even if they are your spouse or your next of kin.
Okay, so if a married couple has everything in joint ownership, so they got joint assets, do they even need a will in place then?
So when I discuss with my clients things like joint assets and wills and whether or not those are needed, it can get a little confusing between what is in your will and what isn't in your will. So when you're thinking about your estate plan, I suggest to my clients that we basically make two lists. And so those are what we call estate assets and non-estate assets. So generally speaking, your non-estate assets are the ones that are joint. Are they joint with a parent, joint with a spouse? Those are things like house or a bank account. And then there's also the things that have designated beneficiaries, like a life insurance policy or an RRSP. Those flow outside of your will. And they're not governed by any of the terms or the provisions in your will. So I usually tell my clients, beneficiaries and joint ownership trump your will.
Allison, you mentioned the distinction between estate assets and non-estate assets. Can you elaborate on how to distinguish these assets and how you should look at them when doing your estate planning?
Yeah. So when we talk about doing an estate plan with our clients, I usually try and present them a few different scenarios. And so the basic scenario that we start with is, what if you died tomorrow? How much is your estate today? Who are your beneficiaries? Where would your money go? And what are the tax consequences of that one? So we always want to start with, like, something happens to you tomorrow, right after you leave my office kind of thing. Scenario number two is typically, what happens if you and your spouse die together or if they pass away before you? Who becomes your beneficiaries in that scenario? Who will be in charge of your children? Where would your money go? When you start to look at the different scenarios, it becomes clear that sometimes those non-estate assets, those things that have beneficiaries, lose their estate, non-estate status, become estate assets because scenario two has kicked in and your beneficiary also passed away. And so will needs to take over at that point and decide who's going to inherit those assets. It's also very important to give close consideration to this when it's a blended family scenario or a second marriage situation, as some assets will pass tax-free to a spouse and not to a children.
Allison, you know, another common statement that I often hear from people is that if I don't have a will, the government's just going to take everything, going to take all my assets. So can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
For sure. So that's not what happens.
Good.
That's a short answer. So I do believe it's important for people to have a will and an estate plan, but it's also important that they know what happens if they don't. In Saskatchewan, like in most other provinces, we have two pieces of legislation that govern if you don't have a will. And so those are called the Administration of Estates Act and the Intestate Succession Act. And so they set out who's in charge of your estate, who's we call an administrator in that scenario, and also who's going to inherit your estate.
We're on the topic of the myths and misunderstanding of estate planning. Kevin Haygoodis is here from PWM, and we've got a special guest, Allison Qatari, founding lawyer at Bridge City Law. And we've got more of those myths and misconceptions when we return to Money Sense after this break. Welcome back to Money Sense. We're talking the myths and misunderstanding of estate planning. Kevin Haygoodis is here, PWM Financial Services. And we've got a special guest, Allison Qatari from Bridge City Law in Saskatoon, sharing some of the myths and misunderstandings of estate planning. You think about power of attorney and beneficiaries. My gosh, there's a lot going on here. So what happens, Allison, when it's all said and done, if I die and I don't have a will?
So the first step is always to figure out who has the right to be your administrator. So who has the right to make that application to the court to be officially appointed as being in charge of your estate? And so typically this does kind of follow the next of kin rule. So it's a spouse, a child, a parent, a sibling. However, under this no will scenario, or what we call an intestacy, there's also the option for your creditor to step in and take over that role. For example, if a person passes away without a will and they own a house and there's a mortgage on that house and no one really wants to deal with everything, or there is no one that's around, the mortgage company has the right to step in and take over that house and essentially kind of foreclose on it, but be appointed as the administrator, sell the house and pay the mortgage. So the other example of a creditor that could step in is CRA. So I believe this is where that myth comes from, that the government's going to get your money, because CRA could step in, especially if there's back taxes owed on the estate, or if that person hasn't been filing their taxes for 10 years or something like that. So the reason they can do this is obviously that the very first thing that any executor administrator is appointed to do is to pay your debts. So they have an obligation to pay your debts, including your funeral expenses, income taxes, and legal and accounting bills.
Out of their own pocket?
No, not out of their own pocket. So many people think that they have to use their own money to pay for this, and they don't. Their responsibility is just to find all of the assets, or find all of the money that is available, make sure they find all of the debts, and basically let them know, this is what I have for money and this is where it's going to go, kind of thing. So you do not have to pay money out of your own pocket for some, if you are an executor administrator.
So the mortgage has been paid off, CRA has been satisfied. How do you figure out then if there's money left over and I don't have a will, who gets what?
So this is where we go back again to that next of kin scenario kind of thing. So it goes down the same path, spouse, children, parents, siblings. And then the current wording of the legislation talks about your descendants and the descendants of your parents to determine who's going to inherit your estate. So because of this language, it does create a scenario where your half siblings could inherit your estate as well if you didn't have a will. And for some people, that may not be their ideal scenario.
So then your spouse just inherits everything if I don't have a will?
Well, sort of. And like we, us lawyers like to say, it depends. So it depends on whether or not you have children. And so the changes that were made recently in the legislation create sort of two scenarios. So the first and the most common one is that all of your children are also the children of your spouse. So there's a couple, they're in their first marriage, and they have children together. So in that scenario, yes, your spouse will inherit your entire estate. However, if this is a second marriage, or if you have children from a previous relationship, then the second scenario will kick in, and in which case your spouse gets the greater of $200,000 or half of your estate, and then the balance is divided between your spouse and your children. And we do have a little quirk in Saskatchewan law that you do have the ability to have two spouses technically at the same time. So one would be your legally married spouse, and one would potentially be your common law spouse that you've still been living with. And in that scenario, the married spouse, the one that has legal, there's still a legal marriage, is going to inherit, unless you have a signed separation agreement.
So then, if you
don't have a spouse, you don't have a children, it's going to go to your parents, your siblings, your nieces, your nephews, that kind of thing.
So we talked about the distribution of those assets, but what are some of the, I guess, the less obvious but still significant implications or challenges, if you will, that could arise for families when someone dies without a will?
So the biggest complication that arises typically is a timing issue. So when you have a will, everybody knows who to talk to. They know that that's their executor. They know the bank knows who to talk to. You don't have to go find your next of kin because your beneficiaries are clearly laid out there. Having a will means that the banks can immediately address things. They can deal with people. They can give information to that. It speeds up the process. Without a will, there can be a delay. Sometimes your assets aren't being properly managed in that time frame because the bank doesn't have someone to officially talk to.
Lots of interesting information. Speaking of timing, we're just about out of it today. Great discussion on our Money Sense, talking about the myths and misunderstanding of estate planning. And I think we've really just touched the tip of the iceberg on this topic. I think we'll have some more discussions on this in the coming months ahead. Any final thoughts on this matter from our guest, Allison?
Sure. So in my opinion, having a comprehensive estate plan is very important, especially if you own a business, maybe have disabled people that are going to be your beneficiaries, or if you have a high net worth and have a complicated tax scenario. So in these scenarios, it's always best to work with a team of advisors, including your lawyer, your financial planner, an accountant, to properly advise you of the tax, legal, and financial consequences of the different scenarios that we're going to present to you, what's going to happen. So many times, proper planning can really be used to mitigate or eliminate the tax consequences upon your death and give you that peace of mind to know that your beneficiaries are going to inherit your assets in as smoothly as possible, just like you hope they would.
And Kevin Hegedus, I know this is something that you've been telling us about for many, many years, and that is having a proper financial plan in place.
Yeah, you know, it really is key, and Allison hit all the high notes there. Having a financial plan in place, and it addresses your financial, your tax, and your estate considerations. It just makes sense. You know, we work so hard for everything that we have. Let's make sure that we protect it properly.
People want to find out more, and I'm curious because Allison is real right next door to your office. If they've got questions about what Allison was talking about today on Money Sense or any financial matters, how do they make contact?
Yeah, well, you can just give us a call. Allison is on our website now as well, and she has obviously her own website, but you can give us a call, 306-975-9500. We can patch you through to her office as well that way. And go to our website. It's pwmprivatewealth.com.
Allison Kattari, thanks so much for being on Money Sense this week.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin, thank you. And we'll talk again. You've been listening to Money Sense.
Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. You've been listening to Money Sense.